This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Earlene McMichael. School's out for children, but the history lessons about two major people movements for freedom continue at the Grand Rapids Public Museum through the Changing America exhibit. It touches on slavery and the civil rights movement. To learn more, I spoke to the museum's president, Dale Robertson. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So you have a very interesting exhibit at the Grand Rapids Public Museum. It's an interesting time, actually, that you are having this exhibit. Just recently on Juneteenth, on June 19th, in Congress, they had hearings in regards to reparations that deal with the topic of slavery. Tell us about this exhibit called Changing America from the Smithsonian that has come to your museum.
So, yeah, the exhibit is called Changing America, Emancipation Proclamation, 1863, to the March on Washington, 1963. And so it's just it's a very interesting juxtaposition, if you will, of these two events that happened 100 years apart. And I have to say, until I saw the title of the exhibit, and of course knowing about both of them, obviously, never made that 100-year connection. And there is something special about 100-year, right? We mark centuries and so forth, right? There's something special about that time period. And so what the exhibit does is puts those two pieces together, separated by that 100 years, and tells each story separately, but then brings them together to create a whole. At least that's what my experience was in going through it.
And we can talk more about this later, but the general way in which it tells this story is how? What are we seeing it through? Text panels? Through how will that story be told?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because really it's we have what Smithsonian created, and then we do what we always call here our West Michigan twist. Right, where we always try to then enhance these traveling exhibits to make a connection for our own community. So the exhibit itself is what we call in the museum industry a panel exhibit. It's a two-sided panel exhibit. So these really fabulous photographs, as you would expect to see from the Smithsonian, okay, on one side of both life in 1863 on plantations, right, and then photos of the March in Washington, 1963. On the other side of the panels are a lot of texts and also images. So, you know, text that explains what we call labels, essentially, in the museum world. And then images that then bring the story together of what was going on in each of those eras. And then around the sides, then, of the exhibit, that's where we've supplemented it with artifacts, either from our own collection or that we've borrowed from the Grand Rapids African American Museum and Archive and, you know, other community members. So then we enhance the story that way with the real thing.
There's an interesting backstory as to how you got this exhibit, which you will now own, because I guess it's being retired.
Right.
But before we get into that, I just at least wanted to mention, if people didn't know the Emancipation Proclamation, what it in fact did and did not do. I know some people are under the impression that the Emancipation Proclamation freed all enslaved persons, which it did not. But what it did do is say that those enslaved persons in the Confederate states were free. And technically, really, they really weren't free. They'd have to run away because they were in the middle of the Civil War with the North. Also, the March on Washington, that was in 1963, as you mentioned earlier, where the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King delivered his historic I Have a Dream speech, where key among the things that he said is that he wanted his children and everyone to be able to be judged on the content of their character and not the color of their skin. And it was originally called the March on Washington for Freedom and Jobs. But let's talk a little bit about how you came to acquire this exhibit. It's a very interesting story.
Yeah, so I was just reading what they call a long read in the Washington Post, and it was about the article was about a city in Alabama named Demopolis. So, you know, great name. Half African American, half Caucasian population. They had a Confederate statue in the middle of town that had been there for years and years and years, and life was going on. It almost became one of those like unseen sorts of things. And then one evening, a police officer was making his rounds, fell asleep, crashed the car into the pedestal, and then a Confederate statue came down. And then it was, well, we're going to put it up. Well, what do you mean you're going to put it up? back up. Well, what does this mean to me? Well, this is what it means to me. And so the town then went through this entire reconciliation process, and the article was about that. And one of the things they did is they brought this exhibit, which was traveling the nation through the National Association of Libraries after being created by the Smithsonian. And I just made the inquiry in our staff meeting, said, so what do folks think about seeing if this is still traveling and bringing it here? And my colleague, Kate Kaczynski, said, well, I'll call. And it's not traveling anymore, but they said, if you pay the shipping, we'll give it to you. So we took it, and we have it, and now we have it up.
You're listening to a West Southwest interview with Grand Rapids Public Museum President Dale Robertson. He's talking about the Changing America exhibit. What are you hoping is going to happen in your community by having that exhibit?
Well, you know, Erlene, when you were just talking here about, you know, just some of the facts, I'll tell you what it did to me, and I would hope it would do a similar thing for others, although everybody's got to make their own sense out of it to their own level. But I remember in an interview on 60 Minutes, and in my mind it was Mike Wallace. I could have been somebody else asking President Clinton, what's the one book George W. Bush should read? And the answer was David Herbert Donald's biography of Abraham Lincoln. So I pulled that out. I had bought it and read it and kept it, and I pulled it out as this exhibit came because I want to do some refreshing about the Emancipation Proclamation. And I happen to be a lawyer, and man, it really took me back to law school, right? Because Congress was looking at actually passing legislation to free slaves everywhere. But by what authority, right? So we don't have the 14th Amendment at this point. That's a post-Civil War amendment. So by what authority would Congress, could they pass a law to impact property within the states? Because remember, at this point, people are property. Right, so that's what I think as Americans we tend to forget, and that's one of the artifacts that we have, a couple of the artifacts that you could actually see, a slave receipt, right? A young girl's name is on it. There's a price list there for slaves. And it makes a huge impact. Now, the president argued that the strongest authority that would have the biggest chance of surviving was under his powers as, you know, as the commander-in-chief under the war powers. And so I argue, along with what I think David Herbert Donald argues, is that after the Emancipation Proclamation, the Civil War became all about slavery. And then we jump then to the march in 1963, and one of the things that I feel really good about in there is we have this, we blew it up as big as the as we could, but of Martin Luther King giving the I Have a Dream speech for the first time in Cobo Arena in Michigan in June. And so there's that really nice connection here between our state and the I Have a Dream speech. And I think about what are the three iconic phrases from our leaders in the 20th century. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And I have a dream. And it was first said here in our state.
And what people also need to know is that it took the 13th Amendment for enslaved persons to become free everywhere.
Correct.
And that became ratified in December of 1865. Tell me about some of the local partnerships that you have. I saw that there was a camp that is being offered, I think it was last week, for young kids associated with this. Talk a little bit about that camp very briefly and some of the other things that are associated
with the exhibit.
Yeah, I can
if you allow me to divert back a little bit on the amendments for just a second. Yeah, you're right. 13th Amendment actually freed the slaves. I key in on the 14th. For a lot of reasons, and one of them is making that connection to the march on Washington, right? Because the 14th Amendment is, of course, you know, due process of laws and equal protection of laws, but it wasn't really until Brown versus Board in 54 and then Matt versus Ohio and Gideon versus Wainwright in the 60s that said due process and equal protection when were applicable to the states. And so you needed to have that, right? So it's those interpretations, march on Washington, and then after that we go to Voting Rights Act and Civil Rights Act, which without those previous decisions, and this to me, this is a huge significance of Brown versus Board. How are you going to enforce those laws in all of the states? So that's the, you know, it's many things combined together to get you to a result. But, I mean, it took nearly 100 years, right, for Plessy versus Ferguson to really be overturned through those court cases. And that's the kind of thinking and that I hope is, will people will go through that process. So, yeah, so part of that then is this camp that we have with this group called Mosaic, where these students are actually doing this kind of research that we're talking about here, and then processing that and connecting with people in the community and asking them to respond and convey their own feelings and their own experiences of civil rights within here just locally.
If I'm understanding correctly, I believe the students, they produced some types of films, and they were in grades 7 through 9.
7 through 9.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about those partnerships where you are saying that local citizens can express themselves through this exhibit. And that partnership is with the Grand Rapids African American Museum and Archives. Talk a little bit about what they're doing.
You're right, with the Mosaic camp, it's, they are taking videos and editing that, and that will become actually this short documentary that will be looped within the exhibit. What we're also doing then is we have opportunities for people to actually write some thoughts that will then go into our archives, our database, which is accessible online. We've got a number of community leaders that we have actually taped, audio tape, so people can come in and pick up the receiver and hear their thoughts. And at the same time, the African American Museum has an exhibit also that's connected to the Emancipation Proclamation and slavery and so forth, and then even a few special events, like they're having some historic quilts they'll be featuring. So it's a nice kind of back and forth, if you will, come here, go there, come here kind of a thing, where we're doing a lot of self-promoting. And George Bayard, who's the executive director, is one of the people that's interviewed, in the exhibit, and he's been a really good partner. In fact, we've partnered with George on many things in the past. He served in our collections committee for years, and so it's a strong partnership between the two organizations.
Isn't there some artifacts also that the Grand Rapids African American Museum and Archives is loaning? I thought maybe I heard some anti-slavery newspapers from the 1800s and some buttons from the 1963 March on Washington. Is that also on display as well?
Yes, it's all in there. In fact, the majority of the artifacts there are from the African American Museum. We have a few from ours, but he has a fabulous collection and has been very generous in loaning it to us. And that's pretty typical in the museum world. We make loans too, but we feel really particularly good about this one, mainly and particularly because of just the long relationship that we've had with George Bayard.
And if I heard you correctly, when they go to the exhibit, they can pick up a phone. Are people making recordings about their thoughts about the exhibit?
Yeah, so we've contacted a number of community leaders and various ages and so forth, and there's a photo, and there's a short biography, and there's just a question that we've asked each of them to respond to is, basically, how do you see the whole civil rights movement having impacted West Michigan? And you can pick out any or all of them and pick up the phone and then hear this audio recording of their thoughts. It's about 2 minutes. Each person talks about 2 minutes or so and gives their perspective. So a lot of this is designed to come in. I mean, you've really got to be prepared to slow down, take it all in. We try to put things together for different learning styles. Some of us a little more auditory, some of us a little more visual. We've got a playlist, so we've got some music in the background. Lots of things to look at, and some soft seating and so forth. So we try to hit all the learning styles. But so if you're a little more auditory, like I happen to be, listening to those comments is really good.
This exhibit will be up through October. What happens to it after that?
So after October, the artifacts will go back. But the actual exhibit itself, the panel show, which is actually three panels. So there's one for 1863, there's one for 1963, and there's like this introduction piece. Those we will make available to community organizations, churches, schools, so forth, that want to borrow it for a time, set it up in their facility, have whatever conversations they want to have. We'll then take it back and loan it out to the next group. No, I just say for us, we just hope that it's going to be used. It would be my preference to keep picking this up and taking it to other places rather than us just storing it.
Would those groups have to pay for it?
No, they wouldn't have to pay for it. No, it would be a free loan.
And admission to this exhibit is free with the admission to the museum?
Correct. It's free with admission to the museum. Absolutely right.
What age group, like how young, could it reach really young elementary school kids or even preschoolers? Like who do you think is the age group, the minimum age group for this exhibit?
Yeah, it's a great question because there's some variability in here, but I'm,
What advice would you have to parents or, yeah?
Yeah, probably fourth grade. I'd say by the time you're probably in sixth. Sixth for sure, you're really beginning to take it all in. So sixth and above, I think, and it really all depends on the kid and how aware they are and what's going on. But when you begin to get that 11, 12, and the 13-year-old, you're getting pretty aware of, things that are going on in history and news and trying to begin to make connections. The main thing I'd have to say, though, is, you really need to come in and be prepared to slow down and look, as my wife, the former teacher, would say, with slow eyes.
Yeah.
Take it in. Yep.
What has been the response to the exhibit?
Well, it's people react in different ways. I was with somebody the other day that I know here in town, and we were going through it, and she was looking at one of the artifacts and began to cry and said, "You didn't prepare me for this." And and others have just taken it in and left, and others have lingered for a long time. So it all just depends on how you wish to, how you wish to process. It's very good. It's factual information. There's lots of good artifacts in there, and the idea is to, ideally, is people will just think about it and try to put all the pieces together to make sense for themselves. I think for us in the museum, I think museums used to fancy themselves as being the final word, and that's not where we are anymore, at least here. I think we've done our job if we can lead you to asking the next best question, and the next best question for you. And I'm sensing that we're doing that really well with this exhibit.
Well, Dale Robertson, President and CEO of the Grand Rapids Public Museum, we really do appreciate you joining us today and talking about your Changing America exhibit, which is up through October. Is it through the end of October?
It's like October 19th is what's sticking in my head.
Well, again, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Earlene. It's been a pleasure.
The longer interview is available at WMUK.org or through our WMUK app or in our podcast, West Southwest. You can subscribe through Apple Podcasts or by searching podcasts in Google Music. For West Southwest, I'm Earlene McMichael.